Zaostřeno.
I'm Daniela Vrbová and this is Focus on Foreigners on the Czech Radio. Welcome. The Syrian conflict has been raging for 2.5 years now and the estimated number of people that were forced to flee the country because of it is also nearly 2.5 million people. The latest numbers from the UNHCR say that there are nearly 2.2 million refugees. Before the conflict, some 22.5 million had lived in Syria. The humanitarian aid workers tend to talk about another 1 million Syrians that had fled thanks to some kind of a visa, be it humanitarian, work permit or family reunion. Only a small part of these people make it to Europe. Usually they prefer to stay in the Middle East in order to be able to return home as soon as possible. Still, how do European states and the European Union as a whole react to the waves of these refugees? Has the help they offered been sufficient or can we as Europeans do much more? In the following 20 minutes, you'll hear opinions from various European countries, institutions, as well as people who know Syria and the Syrian conflict firsthand.
So the situation with the Syrian crisis definitely is not improving. We have increasing number of people displaced within Syria. The latest figures make it seem that 6.5 million people are now displaced within Syria. Most of them are displaced within the region, but increasing numbers are trying to flee the country, including to Jordan, Lebanon, Turkey, Iraq, and to lesser numbers, Egypt and the rest of Europe.
Says Hugh Fenton, who's the director of the Danish Refugee Council's office in Jordan. In October, he came to Prague for a couple of days and gave us this interview. He claims that beside the huge inflation, the Syrian pound has weakened almost threefold and the unemployment is currently at nearly 50%. People employed in the state administration still get paid. In other sectors, however, not always, and therefore many people live only off their savings. We also have to mention warnings from the World Health Organization that had noticed 10 or maybe more cases of polio and is fearing an epidemic. What conditions do Syrians live in, according to Hugh Fenton?
The situation will get much worse over this winter. We were in a situation in the last winter where we decided the situation was bad enough that we couldn't even guarantee people would have fuel for heating. So for last winter, we only provided blankets and warm clothes and very basic things so people could weatherproof their houses. The situation will be much worse this winter with many more displaced people. Our access to populations within Syria still is woefully inadequate. There are many people that are cut off from humanitarian assistance, both in government-controlled areas and in opposition-controlled areas. My own organisation only works from Damascus, from the government-controlled areas, but there are areas within 20 kilometres of Damascus that we cannot reach for humanitarian support because of active fighting. Children are very happy to go to school. Throughout the summer break in Syria, most families would be far too scared to send their kids out on the street to play. That was regarded as far too dangerous. I think for most families, it's an incredibly important break to be able to get the children out of the house and into a normal socialised environment. It isn't all sweetness and light though. We're trying to at the moment include risk education about unexploded bombs, about sniper fire, all of these things into the school curriculum so that the children can also learn about the risks they're undertaking.
One of the European answers to the Syrian crisis has been the resettlement of refugees to Europe. What's your opinion on this and what do the Syrians that you talk to think about it?
It's incredibly important that option is open to them. There are people with a very real fear of persecution that really have no option or no future in a future Syria. So it's incredibly important that the option of either temporarily or permanently departing the region is open. This will always be a minority. The majority of people will neither have the ability or the interest to leave the place of their birth. I think it's important to realise that when we talk about the Syrian crisis, it doesn't just affect Syrians, it affects everyone. Before the crisis, there were almost 500,000 Palestinians and 500,000 Iraqis living in Syria as refugees. These people are under particular stress, with very few options of where to go. Other groups, for example, poor Lebanese that used to go into Syria to work on a yearly basis, they no longer are doing that. You probably heard that there was a boat sinking south of Indonesia last week where there actually were Lebanese that were leaving Lebanon on it. The Lebanese that have been interviewed there say that the economy of Lebanon was collapsing and they too were forced to flee their country.
Being resettled from Syria to Europe, exactly this happened to civil engineer Abdul Karim Abdul Karim 4 years ago. However, he was already a refugee in Syria. He had fled there from the Iraqi conflict in 2007. His experience gives us an interesting comparison in the region just 6 years ago.
I don't want to go into politics, but I am against the regime in Syria. But I must admit it, what this regime and Syria in general, Syrian people, present to Iraq people, was unforgettable. Everything was open for us. Since we are at the border, nobody said, you need a visa, you need a permission, you need. No, you are Iraqi, you have a passport, get in. And since we get in, we have all the rights a Syrian citizen has. My kids were in schools for free. For me in person, I had two operations, medical operation in the hospital for free. We made a load on the Syrian community. There was an inflation, there was a housing crisis, but they did not complain. They did not close the borders. Now I spoke to Syrian people, friends there. They were shocked. They said we expected Iraq will treat us as we treated Iraqis. Now Iraq is building a concrete wall on the border to prevent Syrian people from getting into Iraq.
Abdul Karim puts the European aid in perspective of the aid of other countries in the Middle East and Arab and Muslim countries in general. For sure, he's not very positive about it. He's got tears in his eyes now when he says that Syrian refugees do not deserve such lousy treatment and marginalization. Vincent Cochetel is the director of UNHCR Europe. He gave us this interview at the SHARE Project conference in Brussels at the end of October. The SHARE Project is coordinated by the International Catholic Migration Commission Europe and deals exactly with resettlement of refugees. Are there any good practices in Europe in this respect that you can point out?
I think as a good practice for the time being, European countries are not sending back Syrian asylum seekers to Syria, nor to the countries that are close to Syria, meaning Turkey, Lebanon, Jordan and Iraq. So there is some solidarity shown by the European countries. They give them either subsidiary protection, either refugee status. About 60,000 Syrians have come to Europe since the beginning of the crisis in April 2011. It's a significant effort, but again, compared to Turkey, Turkey has received 660,000 refugees from Syria, so it's still a small effort compared to what the countries neighboring to Syria are doing.
I have to play a statement from Karl Kopp from the German NGO Pro Asyl for you now. He has published a report on the situation at the Greek-Turkish border. He's told me this about the Syrian refugees.
A very sad and bloody chapter of the European refugee policy, to be honest. It's because Greece is in a crisis. Not only the asylum system, the whole country is in a crisis. We speak about human rights violation. We saw many cases. We will make more than 100 interviews, mainly Syrians, who were pushed back from the Greek Coast Guard, from Greek islands back to the Turkish territorial water without any equipment, in a life-threatening way. We met pregnant Syrian mothers, with a baby and pregnant, and a guy with a kidney cancer from Syria, a young football player from Syria, all in one boat, and all were pushed back. And they don't understand this. They are shocked in a double sense. It was life-threatening, but also, what about Europe? They are shocked about this behavior. Thousands of Syrian refugees were pushed back. Only we as one organization with our Greek and Turkish partners will cover by interview nearly 2,000 cases at the land border or sea border. But this is only, one report during the last 12 months. The amazing thing is, I'll give you one figure. In Italy, for North Africa, 7 1,500 Syrian refugees arrived by boat in Italy and in Greece, less than 4,000 arrivals of Syrians this year. That means it's closed. This border is closed. And they close it in a very brutal way and in a violation of international and European law.
Does UNHCR know about these cases, according to Vincent Cochetel? What do you say to that?
We have heard of some incidents. I mean, there have been some incidents of people being pushed back from Ukraine, from Greece. There's one or two incidents at the Bulgarian border that we are looking at very closely. But I say, overall, European Union countries have accepted Syrian asylum seekers at their border. I think the two countries in Europe that are taking the lead in terms of demonstration of solidarity vis-à-vis that Syria crisis is Sweden. And in Germany also, I mean, those countries are really showing the best experience so far. Other countries are opening up a bit on humanitarian visas for family reunion. We see that in Switzerland, we see that in some other countries. And European countries are gradually opening up to the idea that we need to do some resettlement, we need to resettle some of those victims to save some lives and use resettlement also to facilitate family reunion. So I think that's a good moment of solidarity that we see picking up now. It's time because we realize the crisis is not going to end tomorrow in Syria. And very unfortunately, I think some of the Syrian refugees will never return to Syria because the country they fled has disappeared and will not be the same tomorrow. Some minorities may not be able to return. Some people can't return to places that have been totally destroyed. Others have experienced such awful human rights violation that they are traumatized and they don't want to return to that country. So we better think about solutions now, not in 20 years.
Is there any plan B on the European Union level? What if Syrians won't be willing to leave Europe and return back home once the conflict is over?
Well, some of the countries in Europe are thinking about resettlement, so it's not a temporary solution. This is a long-term solution for the refugee. Others, like Germany, have put in place a humanitarian admission program. It's a temporary program in nature. But people may be able to apply for refugee status if they want in Germany. So depending on how the situation evolves, they may be able to stay, they may be able to return. What we see in many crises, if we compare with the war in Bosnia-Herzegovina, where there was also a lot of resettlement efforts, not only to Europe, but in the United States and Canada and Australia. What we saw during that crisis at the end of the war in 1995, when we had the Dayton Peace Agreement, many of the refugees returned to Bosnia because they wanted to contribute to the rebuilding, the reconciliation efforts in their country. Others stayed in European Union and were integrated.
The conflict in the Balkans is an interesting comparison, also number-wise. It was said that 2 million people had to leave their homes back in the 90s, be it abroad or within Yugoslavia. You were there at the time. Can you see any trends of what type of refugees would return home?
No, I would not name a trend there. Sometimes it's more difficult for elderly people to be resettled because, I mean, you know, the linguistic barrier may be more difficult to overcome compared to younger generation. But quite often, elderly refugees like to go back home when it's possible very quickly because they miss the community. They want to visit the graveyards where their ancestors are buried. They want to resume relationship with the neighborhood where they lived before. Young people tend to hesitate a bit more about return because they'd like to see whether the returns are sustainable. They want to make sure that there's not going to be another conflict. So they're a bit more hesitant normally, but it's not very scientific what I'm telling now. It's more in connection with the Bosnia situation.
Some states and some politicians fear the potential security risks connected to accepting Syrian refugees. There may be Islamist radicals among them who may infiltrate Europe in this way. Are there any special security checks in the case of Syrian asylum seekers?
Well, we had that difficulty with the Iraqi refugee already in the past, where we have to be very careful that we are not recognizing the wrong person. So people that have committed a crime against humanity, war crime, or that have been associated with human rights violation are not refugees. So we have to make sure we screen out those people. So it's important that we indeed collaborate with various agencies to make sure that we are not resettling the wrong person. We have to make sure that we don't make any mistake indeed.
But how can this be applied to the case of Syria, where it's not clear who is fighting whom and why?
I mean, we see Syrian refugees in Turkey, in Jordan, in Lebanon, and in Iraq. I mean, we see who are the people in need. You have a lot of women alone with their children, their husbands have died or have disappeared. I mean, there are a couple of groups like that that are easily identifiable and that would not constitute any security problem. I think it's important. When it gets to single men, we are a bit more careful.
What else could the European Union do for the Syrian refugees?
Well, the European Union and the European Commission in particular does a lot in terms of provision of humanitarian assistance to the country neighboring Syria, and it's important because most of the refugees, they don't want to be resettled, they want to stay in the region. They hope that something positive will happen in their country, so they don't want to stay too far away from Syria. And I think it's important that we assist them to stay where they want to stay, but it's also important that we assist the host community, because some villages in Lebanon, you have now more Syrian refugees than local people. So the absorption capacity of the local authorities and local communities is extremely limited. What they have, they're sharing. And that means that, you know, European countries and the European Commission need only not to think about, using humanitarian budgets for that, but it's also using development assistance, you know, because sometimes it's the local infrastructure that need to be reinforced, opening new school, increasing the capacity of hospital, repairing a bridge, repairing a road here and there. Because these are the sort of community support and development activities that will encourage, let's say, the good relationship between the refugee and the host communities.
Vincent Cuchetel from UNHCR has mentioned good practices of two countries that decided to help the Syrian refugees in a more significant way, Sweden and Germany. Hilde Scheidt is councilwoman in the North German city of Aachen for the Green Party. Aachen has been accepting waves of refugees since the 70s, and Hilde Scheidt has been dealing with specifically this issue for only a decade less. My question to her was, what makes the city council always vote to accept even more refugees?
I think when you are in a social society, it's a must. You must look around your borders and you must look around Europe, and you see it in television. You see Lampedusa, you see the wars in Africa, you see the civil war, and you must help. I think it's a human right to be a helper and also to be someone who get help from the society.
Germany has announced its willingness to resettle 5,000 refugees from Syria and Jordan this year. Although this has proven to be quite a bureaucratic burden, still the number is impressive. How many refugees will go to Aachen then?
I think the most problem is the financial problem. We want to do it, we do want to do more, but we need more financial support from our government.
Similarly, Gabriela Stroth from the Integration Department in the County Administration of Västerbotten in northeast Sweden explains the situation in Sweden. According to the latest numbers of the Swedish Migration Board, 60,000 people have sought asylum in the country in 2013, out of which 17,000 were Syrians. Moreover, Sweden has resettled further 200 people. These numbers make Sweden a top country in Europe in receiving Syrian refugees.
We have a fast track, not especially for Syrians, but for everyone that applies for asylum. And since September this year, we have a change that the people from Syria, they will get permanent residence permit, not just for 3 years like in the rest of the European Union.
What's the attitude of Swedish cities and counties towards receiving Syrian refugees?
We have 290 municipalities in Sweden, and out of them, around approximately 270 of them receive refugees. So it's quite easy compared to maybe other countries, but we can see that it has been more difficult recently because the far right-wing parties have gained a lot of success in Sweden the last couple of years. So we can notice a change in attitudes.
Let's imagine the map of Sweden now. Are there any counties that are interested in receiving refugees more than others?
we can see that when it comes to housing, it's a big problem in Sweden in general, but in the north of Sweden it's easier to find housing for refugees. So many, especially resettled refugees, they end up in the north of Sweden and in very, very small municipalities. It's not the big cities.
I don't want to sound stereotypical, but exactly North Swedish mentality and culture may seem cold and introvert from the outside. The weather, moreover, doesn't make it easy for some outdoor activities in the public places. Isn't that a problem when trying to integrate refugees in the everyday life?
This can vary a lot from city to city, but generally I can say that we have much to learn from other European countries when it comes to involving churches, NGOs and other organizations in receiving refugees. In Sweden we have a system where I would say only professionals work with refugees, the municipalities, authorities, but we don't have the kind of system like in the south of Europe where NGOs have a very active role, unfortunately not, and that is very important. I think it's a key success in order to involve or integrate refugees, so we have a lot to learn from other countries.
We have saved the Czech view for the end of this program. At the regular Salzburg Forum, that is the summit of ministers of the interior in the Central and Southeast Europe, Bulgaria has asked for help with the Syrian refugees. The current influx has surpassed the capacity of the Bulgarian refugee system. As confirmed by Lubomir Metnar, the first Deputy Minister of Interior of the Czech Republic, Czechs have offered material and expertise help to the Bulgarian asylum system. This means that Syrian refugees won't be resettled in the Czech Republic.
V rámci humanitárního přijetí či přesídlení syrských uprchlíků se Česká republika staví rezervovaně.
The Syrian community here is small and has no deep roots. Therefore, there is fear that Syrians would use the Czech Republic as a temporary country of asylum and would move to other European states, says Lubomír Metnar. He calls the Syria conflict the worst refugee-producing conflict that Europe has had to deal with in the past 20 years. The Czech Republic plans no resettlement of refugees. Only those who have sought asylum or any kind of visa here won't be returned back, even though their documents may be incomplete, invalid or expired, says Lubomír Metnar from the Ministry of Interior. According to him, 114 Syrians have sought asylum in the Czech Republic in the past 2 years. Receiving them in big numbers raises ambiguous emotions and opinions in Europe, and those who voice them have their right to do so. It is certain, however, that Syrians are not seeking asylum just for fun. The help we can offer them can be either financial, humanitarian, or, as Abdul Karim from Iraq suggests, one that costs nothing. Still, one that has the potential to make a big change.
Living in such advanced country like Europe make people sometimes, or some of people, don't feel what is going on in the other area of this world. What they see on the news 10 or 20 seconds, maybe they will think about it or not, but I'm sure nobody can feel how would a man who see his own family just dead under a collapsed house. You see it in a picture, but have you ever asked yourself about the feeling of the father of these kids? I really would like these people, before refusing to accept new people, just thinking, oh, they will behave not good, they are foreigners, we don't want a new language, we don't want new people in our community. Just thinking about it for a second, about the feeling. Maybe accepting these people will save their lives forever, and maybe these people will turn after all into a useful members in this community. Don't rush to negative feeling towards the foreigners. They are humans, they have feelings, and if they have the choice of a normal life, not a better life, they would not even think of coming here. Nobody wants to leave his house and his friends, his relations, his job, and go to a new country to begin again from the zero. So please understand these people. Feel as they feel. Zaostřeno.